Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Time for Movies and Booze indeed. We are joined by Linda Coogan, Fionnuala Jones and Olivia Fahey. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
Linda, I'll start with you and your wine stained top. What?
Yeah, that serves me right.
What actually happened?
What happened was I had to obviously taste the wine last night to make sure it was okay and suitable for today. And I had a glass, so it was an open bottle that I brought in and it spilled all over my top. Yeah, so it's no longer a pink top. It is a kind burgundy. Of burgundy colour yeah. top.
Is it, you know, that old kind of cliche about if it's red wine, you rub in white wine, that makes it go away. Is that true?
I would just try and lick it off the top. I don't know.
Actually, yeah, that way. So what two wines will we be
happy,
trying not to spill in our clothes today?
Happy National Chianti Day.
Okay, I didn't know there is one. Yeah,
yeah, there's
okay.
one
there's
for
a day
most.
For everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I just kind of said, what will we do today? And Chianti is the red.
Yeah.
And I decided, I looked into this is one of my favourite Chiantis. It is one of the oldest wines, family run wineries in Tuscany. So I said, what would I do? That's kind of opposite with the white. So it's actually an Austrian white that's made by lots of different farmers, basically over 100 of them making wines for a co-op. So they're totally different stories with different wines. So a white Gruner Veltliner from Austria and then a classic Chianti Classico from Tuscany.
So okay, all right, Jewish. That's interesting. Yes, Italy and Austria. So what the fascists were drinking during World War II. Presumably not. And Beetlejuice is back, except why did they call it Beetlejuice Beetlejuice?
Well, I think it's a play on the whole thing of saying his name three times. So because it's the second one, they're just saying it twice.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
We can't say it three times at all today.
No way.
What
Michael Keaton jumping in.
You imagine.
Yeah.
How long is Michael Keaton in it for?
I think it's still around like the 12-minute mark, but maybe 15 minutes total. But it's enough. Like.
Yeah. Okay. Sound man just walked in, looked at you disapprovingly, walked out again. Don't know why. Yeah. You just didn't like the look of you.
I didn't like what I was saying.
I didn't like what you were saying into that microphone in that way. Is this like Michael Keaton's making a fortune from just like, you know, coming on, waving, being a bit Beetlejuicy and then, you know,
kind of what I thought. But after seeing it, he has completely embodied the character once more. And the storyline, you know what? It kind of makes sense.
Okay. All right. It doesn't make sense. Oh, look, he's back now. Right. Okay. Quite different is the other film is a Netflix film.
It is indeed, Rebel Ridge. So this is by Jeremy Saulnier, who also made Green Room. I don't know if you remember this, but it was about a punk band that go and play for a neo-Nazi group without realising it. And Patrick Stewart is the leader of the neo-Nazis.
Oh, nice.
So think, you know, a man that can get Patrick Stewart to play a neo-Nazi is now doing this film, which is kind of about like a Marine who is in the small town in the back arse of nowhere in America. And he kind of discovers a lot of corruption in the local police department and can do nothing about it, even when he's 30 grand down when they basically steal it from him. So it's quite intense, but, you know, Jeremy Saulnier, like, that's what he does best, is intense movies.
Okay, and is Don Johnson's in this too, is that right?
He is indeed,
is he the baddie, like, in it?
Yeah, pretty much. He is the not quite sheriff, but what you call a chief police in the local town.
Okay. Is he now having kind of a moment in the sense that he specialises in kind of vaguely racist types down south? Because it sounds like something I've seen him in before.
Yeah, I was even trying to think of that myself. But yeah, it's a role that I think you do sort of sense that you've seen him in before, but it is also still very different. It's a very peculiar thing. It's really hard to actually explain the film as a whole because it's one that I think was a very good film, but it's a really hard one to recommend because it's just not like an easy watching thing.
Okay, one of them. All right. Okay, one of those you should watch.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of great. It's like your vegetables. Right, so who TF did I marry?
Yeah.
Explain what that is first.
Okay, so we need to go back to February, if anyone can even remember back that far. There was this TikTok series that essentially kind of blew up overnight by this woman called Risa Tisa Johnson. It was this 50-part TikTok series in which she documented...
5-0.
5-0, right? That's kind of one of the reasons why it went viral, because it was just like... There's a whole viral soundbite from the series where she's like, part 37, who the F did I marry? And it's just basically her detailing this relationship in which she got with someone and felt like she was essentially conned because he kept lying about things, like said he played professional football. He just essentially ended up turning out to be a con artist, right?
Isn't that something you could check?
Yeah, you would think apparently. Yeah. And then she copped it then because his social security number wasn't right. Anyway, the 50 separate videos added up to like 50 hours in length, right? But it blew her up. She ended up getting like 3 million followers in a 2-week period. The series has 550 million impressions and like, she kind of had her 15 minutes of fame doing lots of interviews at the time, whatever. And I think she spoke to The Cut about, you know, if it was to be adapted, she'd love like someone like Shonda Rhimes to do the story or Ava DuVernay, whatever. And in terms of who she'd want to play her, she'd want Natasha Rothwell. If anyone doesn't know who Natasha Rothwell is, she's the masseuse in the season one of White Lotus. And she's actually coming back for the next season of White Lotus to come. But basically, Natasha Rothwell has actually won the rights to adapt this story now for television. So she's going to produce it and she's going to star in it. Apparently very competitive bidding war. She's executive producing it. So yeah, we are going to see who the F did I marry on TV, which like, how does that translate? You know what I mean? Like I get that it was a funny moment in social media time and like it is a bit of a mad story in terms of her being duped. But how does this extend beyond? We already got 8 hours of content out of it that maybe we probably didn't even really need, as fascinating, as compelling as it was. I'm just kind of like, it's a bit mad. Like, is there a way that they can do it in a funny, tongue-in-cheek way? Maybe, I don't know. It's a bit mad.
It's also astonishing how quickly then these things turn around. This thing only arrives in February and the rights are sold so many months later. Whereas usually it would take like a year or two for something, to the rights to be bought for
this
something.
Is the thing. But then there is also the thing of, I mean, I barely remembered that this happened this year. You know what I mean? It actually felt like it happened longer ago, such as the way social media cycles work and how news cycles work. Now, I will say Natasha Rothwell is a very good actress and she's one of kind of the high points of The White Lotus, and I'm really excited to see her come back to The White Lotus and see where her character is now at this point. But I just like, I don't know how this, I'm just kind of like, why? And I feel like that's every week I come and I have stories and I go, I don't know why they're doing this, and I'd love answers.
Okay.
But
well, because you know someone thinks they'll make money. The person that she married, yes. I assume social media had him outed in jig time, along with 20 other people who are completely innocent.
Classic, in baby reindeer fashion, yeah. So she referred to him in the videos as a Legion, but obviously people found out what his real name was. He's gone on, he's spoken publicly to deny all her claims, say that it's not true, whatever. So then there is also that implication of he obviously has to be portrayed in this fictionalized story now.
Mm.
It's weird. Like, I just don't know how you navigate this unless you do it in kind of a fun, like, if you go down the quote unquote true crime side of things and take this like really, and like, look, don't get me wrong, what happened to her,
A criminal element?
There wasn't, like I mean that she was like cheating on her and stuff like that. I don't know if there was necessarily like a criminal element, in just the sense that he was like, she was so duped in the sense that she actually had no idea who she was married to. Like, she got away and married this fella and no idea who she was. I don't think there's a criminal element to it, but just more so that, like, so that's why I'm thinking, don't go down the whole true crime real life, even though it is based on real life. I'm like, there's a way that you could do this kind of funny and that it is mad, and almost nearly taking on the fact that it blew up as the result of the TikTok and incorporating that into the story. I don't know, but
yeah. Okay, or maybe you could do the story about, is she married to anyone now?
I don't know. I think she's kind of living her best single TikTok life.
One hopes so.
Making millions off this TV show now.
And the producers of The Apprentice are launching a crowdfunding campaign. You would have thought that they'd have a few bob themselves already.
You would think, yeah. No, this is an independent film and it basically charts, it's from director Ali Abbasi, and it's like Donald Trump's rise to power in the 80s under the influence of right-wing attorney Roy Coyne. Very hard to say. Oh my God.
It is, yeah.
Sebastian Stan is playing Donald Trump, and then Jeremy Strong, Love of My Life, is playing Roy Coyne. Yeah, exactly. And they look absolutely terrifying in the images. And I didn't really get Sebastian Stan as the casting, but in the images, it does kind of work.
Mm.
But anyway, basically, like, there was, this film was commissioned, it's an independent film, and it had been financed by this guy called Dan Snyder. He's this pro-Trump billionaire, and he's involved with this company called Kinematics, and they put up the equity against for the domestic rights of the film. But basically, they kind of thought this film was going to portray Trump as a lovely, jolly old guy.
Yeah.
A real spunky guy. And then obviously they saw a final cut of the film and they were like, actually, like, there's a lot of dark themes in terms of what it covers, but there's also, like, apparently, again, spoilers if you're planning on going seeing The Apprentice, there are clips of him where he's shown getting liposuction. He wasn't very happy with this, so it was like, yoink, we're taking back the money, do whatever you want. So they've launched this Kickstarter campaign to make sure that they can get a wider distribution deal. They had a goal set at $100,000. They've smashed that. It's probably at more than this now, but, like, at the time that I did these notes, it was at $139,000 for to get it as widely released as possible, because, like, the cinema and the distribution stuff is so important. You need people to go out and see it. Like, we even did recently, like, kind of a completely separate story, but on the podcast we covered Empire Records, and that flopped because, like, the release was just so limited because it tested so badly initially with audiences. It's not even that bad a film, but it's just that nobody saw it. So I can understand when you have something as splashy as this and, like, as good a story as this, and people do want to see it.
Of course.
And it's interesting that Trump is like, I don't want people to see it. And it's kind of like, why? Why though?
That would make you want to see it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
He need to sue them at one point as well.
Yes.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
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 The and 100 grand is peanuts, I would have thought, for in the movie industry.
You would think, yeah, you would think.
Okay, so if they've got over the 100 grand they were looking for, then they're you know, happy out then, are they? It's all going ahead.
Yes. I think the release now is slated for October 11th. So watch this space for The Apprentice.
Well, we'll move on to our first wine of the day, Linda, and think about Donald Trump getting liposuction while we're drinking.
Oh, God. I have a funny taste in my mouth now.
Yeah. It's not the only woman who's ever said that about Donald Trump.
Jesus, I walk myself into a lot of this, don't I?
It's 3:15.
I wish I hadn't said that. Okay, let's move on.
Okay. Yes. Domain Wachau from Austria, Gruner Feltliner, is the grape variety, a white grape that is best known from Austria. And all of the Austrian bottles as well, just to remind listeners that they have the Austrian flag on them. So that's how that they're a legitimate wine from Austria. So Gruner Feltliner, I felt leaner after I had a few glasses of this.
Hey!
Yeah, it's a joke I always try to pull. It's not very funny, but... So on the note, like, this is just a wine that everybody should have in their fridge at all times, as well as a bottle of champagne, in my opinion, because this is not going to offend anybody. It is so light, fresh, easy, crisp, a little bit of apple, a little bit of lemon, citrus. It's so versatile. It just goes with so many different types of food. If you've got a last minute people coming over, open a bottle. If you've got a last minute dinner plans and, you know, you're invited, this is so safe to bring anywhere. Salads, chicken, anything on its own. It doesn't need anything. Light cheeses, everything. What do you think?
It's very fresh.
Yeah, really fresh.
Very, very,
very
fresh.
Very apple-y, actually. Just when you
it is very apple-y, yeah. It's almost like if it had a fizz, you'd think it was a Prosecco or a champagne.
Like, it's just really delicate and light. Yeah. So again, I mean, I always like to highlight the wines that don't really get a look in, because Gruner doesn't really, as well as Riesling. You know, people forget about it. They go for the usual Pinot Grigio, Sauvignon Blanc, and some people go for Chardonnay. But for me, this has a gorgeous...
I'm all judgy the way you said that. Some people go for Chardonnay.
I love Chardonnay.
Some people root through bins looking for food.
I love Chardonnay. But again, it's not a style that most people would go for. Whereas this is more on the lighter style that would appeal to the Sauvignon, Pinot Grigio, Picpoul de Penne drinkers, I think. And also, I know this is terrible to say, but the label has a little bird on it.
Ah, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And this is something that people adore about wines, because they have single vineyards as well. So this particular wine is about 17 to 20 euro in independent off licenses. It's hard to get many below that, because all the grapes here are handpicked. As I was saying, this is actually made by a co-op. But if you go on their website, it's so cute, because they have literally pictures of the 100 farmers that they have working for them. And they're all looking after small little lots of vines, and they tend them. They're all organic, and then they buy them off them. They like long term arrangements and contracts. And the people are really, like, it tells a little story, a little bio about all of the people who were involved in it. And I just thought, here.
Okay. That's
it's
sweet.
Not just.
Yeah, that's sweet.
It's not just a. But it's really pleasant wine, isn't it?
It is.
I like it.
It's a very pleasant wine indeed. Okay, I do have to take a break. What movie would you like to do first?
Oh, we're going
to
go with The Juice Is Loose, I think.
We'll go with The Juice Is Loose coming up after this.
So you're saying that someone called Beetlejuice...
Don't say his name. If you say his name three times, he will appear.
I know this is a big step for you, but in the words of Dr. Glickman, I'm going to give you the push you need. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Is that...
Beetlejuice!
First of all, I want you two kids to know this is a safe space, okay? Feel free to express yourself. Don't be afraid. I sense there's an enabler here, but we'll get to that.
You're a figment of my imagination.
Really? Is this a figment of your imagination?
Ooch. That is Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice. Is it in cinemas now?
It is in cinemas now. After how many years since the original?
A few decades, 20 at
something.
Least,
yeah. So it's, I think we can call it a legacy sequel, you know, in the Top Gun style. But yeah, essentially, you know, the juice is loose once more. Lydia, he's still pining after her, and he kind of finds a way in when her daughter gets kidnapped into the underworld. And essentially, he's just like, this is my chance with her again. And there's a few other little like subplots, like his ex-wife is trying to hunt him down and she's kind of killing people in the underworld if you can get even more dead. And there's a detective who's then trying to hunt her down. And there's all these like, kind of like, interconnecting tales to it. So it's a fun little jaunt through the underworld again and very nostalgic as well.
Yeah. So like, what's the overarching plot rather than all the subplots?
The overarching plot is... Lydia's father has passed away, so the family are all kind of back together again in the old house, and then her daughter is kidnapped to the underworld and Lydia needs to try and get her back, and the only way she can do that is with the help of Beetlejuice.
Okay, all right, fair enough. And so and the tone at which it's played, is it similar to the first film?
It is. I felt that it was really on brand. It basically, the vibe of the whole thing, it just really picks up where it left off just from the opening sequence, which is sweeping over the model town that we saw in the first installment. And it just takes you right back to when you saw the film for the first time. So I was a massive fan of Beetlejuice. I used to put it on every Halloween, every October. I'm not a horror movie fan, so these were my Halloween movies.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was like, it's still very on brand. It's probably one of the best things that Tim Burton has done in a while as well. Like, I thoroughly think that this is his groove kind of coming back as well in terms of his films. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So it was a sequel worth making, would you say?
Do you know what? I think so, because there is clearly the appetite there. Like, the film is slated to make at least $130 million over the course of the weekend in the States alone. So I think that people still have like the love, the grow for it. And what we've been seeing recently is that like a lot of like the cult classics that may not have like done much when they first came out are now becoming so popular that they're getting like all of these reboots. So I think Beetlejuice is one of them that at first I was a bit like protective of it. But in hindsight, I think they have done a good enough job to kind of warrant it. Did it knock it out of the park and is absolutely perfect? No, I think as you just said, like, what is the core plot and not all of these subplots?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of those subplots can go away completely. And if you just focused on that core sort of plot, it could have been developed a little bit more. But overall, I still think it's fun, it's entertaining. And even like the, so Monica Bellucci is playing the ex-wife, and Dolores. And when she is introduced in the film, it's actually quite a fun sequence done to the Bee Gees tragedy. And I really enjoyed that. But then afterwards, I was like, oh, well, like it didn't really go anywhere in the end. So I was a bit kind of like, eh. With that. But yeah, overall, I think it's still just like I'm buzzing just sitting here in the chair talking about
okay,
it. And that's
all
what
right,
I want
good.
From it.
And your man, Geoffrey Jones, was in the previous film who since that time convicted and arrested a few times, I think, on child pornography charges.
Yeah, he's been arrested twice and he is now a registered sex offender. And the way that they kind of handled it, like he's clearly not in the film and his character is written out of it, but then is still kind of in it because, of course, it's set in like mostly in the underworld. So, of course, if a character has passed away, you're probably going to see them when you are in those scenes.
Yeah.
And the way that they've kind of done it, it's a bit kind of too silly in a way, but also maybe making too much light of the situation as to why he's not in the sequel as well. So it just, I think it would have worked better if they had already had it that he was already passed on in the first place. So then they've just gotten back together for the, I don't know, clearing out the house or something like that. But the funeral and all that is already well gone. He has gotten onto the soul train. He's gone. And then have just the film being the aftermath. But because he is still kind of around, it's very fresh and all this, there you do kind of see like little glimpses of him here and there. And it's but you don't see him see him. It's, I can't say exactly what happened.
Okay, fair
spoiling
enough.
It, but yeah. Yeah, I felt a little uncomfortable with that. I don't know whether they were deliberately doing it to be kind of like a bit of an F you, if I may say, to him and the reasons why he's not there, or if they were just trying to do justice to the character himself. I don't know. But yeah, it didn't land for me.
And what's the time gap between the first Beetlejuice and the second one?
I think it's the same in terms of real life. So it is about that 20, right, okay. So it's, 30 yeah. years mark kind of thing.
And considerably, yeah. Linda, you were nodding furiously about the first Beetlejuice.
I love the first Beetlejuice. It's just, again, I'm terrified of scary movies, but this is something that I totally would watch at Halloween. And I can't remember if it's appropriate or not for kids, but I have my teenager.
It's appropriate enough.
Yeah. Well, what is the age on it? Actually, that's a good
question. Don't know.
Yeah.
Like 1988 was the first one. Like that's crazy.
No, I mean, like, is it a 15s?
I'd be very surprised if it's more than like PG-13. Okay. I'd be very surprised if it is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's in the cinemas now, and what a lot of people have suspected is proven to be true. A number of reputable sources, mostly some bloke on the internet, has been saying that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce don't have a real relationship, that the whole thing's concocted, and now they've got the paperwork to prove it.
Yeah, there was this quote-unquote relationship contract that leaked from a, like, it seems to have been a Snapchat picture originally, and like if you Google it, it'll come up.
Well, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Media verification, media literacy, we love it, girls. Someone has taken what looks like a Snapchat picture of what looks like, again, a contract from this PR company called Full Scope, and it basically seems to set out the action plan for what they're going to do with Travis Kelce after him and Taylor break up. And there's all sorts of objectives written on it, you know, that obviously they're wanting to minimise negative blowback for him when they break up, blah, 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 whatever. This obviously leaks. This goes mad because the NFL season is just about to kick off. They're like couple du jour. She's the most famous person in the world. Obviously, all these reasons I don't need to explain. So his people are after having to come out and saying, you know, like this, the documents were called Comprehensive Media Plan for Travis Kelce's relations following breakup with Taylor Swift. They've come out and said they're entirely false and fabricated and were not created, issued or authorised by this agency. I think it went from Snapchat to Reddit. They've since said they're getting on to Reddit to try and basically pull them from the internet, but it's kind of Streisanding effect yeah, now because like it's everywhere. As I said, if you Google it, you'll find it. She being Taylor Swift, not the cat's mother, was at the opening game of the NFL season last night. They were holding hands, all seemed happy, lovey-dovey. I don't think do I think it's true? I don't know if the contract is true, because how easy is it for someone, as we've already pointed out, to take a photo, print off some documents, get the JPEG of the PR company and stick it as a header? You know what I mean? Very easy to do that. Too easy, as you said. Like, that's not to say that there's still not potentially a real relationship. You know what I mean? And they're the things we'll never be privy to in terms of Hollywood. But we know people are kind of introduced, put together to benefit each other's images, all that jazz, whatever. But I will also say there's a subsection of like Taylor's fandom, even amongst the Swifties, who are, and it's too long to get into now, we simply do not have time, but they are adamant in the belief that she is queer, but just can't come out because of she'll face all these repercussions by being queer and being publicly queer, whatever. And like, when I say they are, if you go down the rabbit hole of TikTok of these people, these gaylers, as they call themselves, a frightening place, a truly frightening place. So I wouldn't be surprised if it came from one, I don't want to, because I don't know, but like if it came from that corner, it wouldn't surprise me because they are unhinged. Unhinged.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Okay.
They just won't buy into this relationship at all because they're like, she's gay, it's not real, but they have to do this because she's gay and it's
And she can't come out because she's a vulnerable, powerless woman.
Yeah.
And in this fake document, there isn't like a date when they're supposed to break up.
Oh, I think there might have been, but I hadn't seen it because it's just like the way it's just like the it's basically to like it's this whole thing of like, how are we gonna, because you know, obviously, when she splits up with anyone, like there is an immediate negative connotation on the man. So like, again, it's also fodder for people who don't like Taylor Swift to go off with that, to be like,
sure,
of course she has contracts with men, blah, 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 whatever. But like, it's not real. Like, let's, primary and secondary sources here, guys. We learned it in history in secondary school. Let's go
it's
back to that place.
It's a horrific place to, but for her particularly, that's a horrific place to live. For the rest of her life, she's kind of doomed to rabid people kind of speculating and, like, or analysing or just making stuff up about
and
her.
It doesn't, and look, I would have been critical of her before in terms of maybe not speaking out on certain things and thinking trying if she has an onus too because she is so powerful and because she has so much influence. But you look at even what happened recently with, you know, Vienna and the Vienna shows being cancelled as part of the Eras tour because of this terror plot. And some, again, not all, some of the Vienna Swifties were going mental at her for not speaking out and making a statement, you know, as to why they were cancelled and what was happening and why she could plan on other gigs and like what.